Gonna call my cousin Danny.
Hello.
Hey, Danny, what's going on?
How's it going? Good.
So your name is Donato Cassarella.
Yes, it is.
As is your father's.
It is.
And my name is Dan Cassarella, Daniel Cassarella.
Yep.
But we both go by Dan Cass.
It's true. And funny enough, I think I kind of even stole that a little bit from you, because before college, I was always Danny. And then a lot of my college friends went with Dan. I think that's when the world really collided a bit.
And it makes any time we have family get-togethers, or even just you and I go out, very confusing.
Yeah, Dan Cass over here, Dan Cass over there. We've done it in New York, we've done it in Vegas. It's a globe-trotting name.
Yet we have not gotten to any trouble with it yet, which I think is upcoming.
It's true. There's ample room for shenanigans.
Today's episode of the show is all about self-validation. And so I felt as though calling you seemed like the easiest way for me to say, I love you, Dan Cass, as opposed to saying that to myself.
That's a great point. And I'll say that right back at you. I love you, Dan Cass.
So one of the things we're going to talk about today is self-validation. Do you believe that in order to truly love others, you have to love yourself first?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a degree to that. I think it goes both ways, though. I don't think you can learn one without the other.
Mm-hmm.
I think loving others helps you figure out how, in turn, to love yourself and vice versa.
That is a great answer. Well, thank you so much. I love you, and we'll start the show. Hello, and welcome to Out of Love. I'm your host, Dan Cassarella, and I'm not always there when you call, but I'm always on time. You've heard this saying before, you can't love others until you love yourself. And on today's show, I want to find out if that's really true, and explore how does our own self-love influence the love we have on others? Can we not love our friends, family, and partners honestly if we can't reflect that same love inwards? Do we need to have a sense of self-validation in order to validate and build up the people around us? Today's guest, Amanda Dark Angeles, went through her own journey on finding self-validation. Amanda is a wonderful and lively composer who's written the book and music for a number of musicals, including one called Single Rider. She's also written her own original material. Here's Amanda singing her song, Number 3.
Oh, I'm number 3. It's your mama, your girlfriend, and me. I should be happy to be just one of your ladies. Oh, what I wouldn't do to be your numero two. It would be my dream come true, but darling, not for you.
Amanda recently went through a breakup with her girlfriend of 8 years. 8 years. It's like going through high school twice. And before that, she was in a string of relationships, making now the first time she's been single in 11 years, over a decade. Amanda and I sat down and discussed the role validation plays in relationships, how we need to self-improve for others and not anyone else, and what it's like to be single for the first time in a decade. Again, 11 years. So let's talk to Amanda. I'm going to start off by asking a very stupid question.
All right, go for it.
You know that scene in Say Anything where John Cusack is holding the boombox outside his girlfriend's house and it's playing In Your Eyes?
Of course.
If someone is outside with a boombox, what song would get you to go outside to see them?
Oh, wow. That is a good question. There's a lot of songs. Okay, I know. The first thing that came to my head was More Than Words by Extreme.
Oh, wow. Nice.
That song to me, it's so sexy. It's so pretty. It's so poignant. It doesn't beat you over the head with it, but it's so funny that you bring that up because I'm the type of person that like does that. In high school, I would like knock on my girlfriend's like back door because she had like a private door to her bedroom. Dangerous. And I would sing her songs at her back door. And
oh my god.
And I was like, all right, can I come in now? So I love that. I'm a sucker for all of that.
What would you say your most romantic gesture that you ever done is?
That's up there. I don't know. I feel like as I got older, I did a lot of like cutesy little things. I planned a few extravagant birthdays with like very pricey dinners and like tickets to the ballet and things of that nature. But then also tiny things like making like cookie molds of like our favorite sayings. I mean, perhaps they're, you know, grandiose, perhaps they're kitschy.
Sure, but people like being appreciated and reminded that someone's looking out for them.
For sure. I think the most romantic gesture that you can ever do, though, is just like bringing your person home, like their favorite snack unprompted.
Oh, yeah. Anything that's a surprise. I feel stupid. The song that came to my head instantly was I'm Like a Bird by Nelly Furtado.
That's a great song.
Because I love that song, and it would take someone who really knows me to know that would be like, oh, why is that playing outside to get me outside?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. It's kind of a sad song.
Yeah, it's not a romantic song.
Yeah, no, not at all, but it's a good one. It's a really good one.
That or something that like appeals to my ego, like so hot you're hurting my feelings.
We love a good ego boost. Live for those.
Before we get into more personal things, you're a composer, and I would love to talk about that for a second.
Sure am. Honestly, how I kind of fell into this was always because of some sort of love or crush or something that I couldn't figure out how to express. Like, I remember my friend was going through something. I might have been 13 years old is when I wrote my first, like, song. And I remember waking up in the middle of the night and like having this thought about Confusion, and the hook was Confused. It was a very cute, no, it wasn't cute. It was kind of a sad song, but I was always writing music. It was my outlet. I was always doing theater, always just writing music on the side. And then, you know, going into the college situation, I auditioned for both composition programs and musical theater programs, and I got into both. And then at that point in time, I needed validation, I guess, for myself that I could pursue theater. And, you know, going to the Boston Conservatory was like, you know, one of the cream of the crop schools to do that. So that's the path I chose. Then I came out of college, you know, having a couple of fun cabaret songs under my belt. And then, you know, those kind of got circulated in the city, various shows here and there. And one thing led to another. And, you know, I've written like 7 musicals now and have scored several projects. I've worked with several theater companies, and I'm lucky. I've been very lucky to have early success, I think, and having confidence early on that like I could do it and I knew what I was doing, and starting out, you know, and having pretty decent success before the age of 25, and then kind of figuring out how to make that grow and continue is still, you know, part of my journey here. But it's honestly my favorite form of expression. And a lot of times when I can't get thoughts out properly, they do come out in song.
Is that kind of a means to process feelings? Like if you're feeling a certain type of way, but you don't know how to verbally articulate it, does it just naturally come to you in a melody or lyrics?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, a lot of times, you know, these couplets will kind of come out of nowhere and I'm like, oh, wow, that is a poignant thought. Or, you know, even if it's a mood, you know, like, yeah, it always comes out of some sort of emotional processing. It's been a hard transition too, because it's like, you know, being a kind of career composer now, you kind of need to be able to make the muscle work at the drop of a hat. And, you know, when you're so emotionally fueled, you know, it can be difficult to just have ideas all the time.
You, at the beginning of the pandemic, you posted a song on Instagram, and there was a lyric that I really liked. If the world is going to end, we might as well be more than friends and wallow while the world swallows us whole. Was that inspired by anything in particular, aside from the obvious, you know, global doomsday around us?
No, not at all.
If the world's gonna end tomorrow, come share your sorrow with me. And if the world's gonna end, we might as well be more than friends and wallow while the earth swallows us whole.
That was in the moment. It was very in the moment, that one. That was the top of quarantine, being kind of not newly single anymore. It's been about 5 months now. I kind of quickly started getting my groove back and like flirting with folks and talking to people and, you know, hooking up with people and all that kind of stuff just for, you know, my own validation and sense of self. And then I think realizing that, you know, once all this was going to be happening and being like, oh man, you know, started to have some forward motion here and some of these things that were quite enjoyable. And now it's all going to kind of dissipate and just sit idly. And that song really, yeah, just came right out of the air and into my head. And I didn't even really think twice about posting it. I think I literally wrote it and wrote it and posted it in maybe within a 15-minute span. I was like, I think this is funny.
You mentioned you were newly single. That's kind of the reason we're here talking today, because you had a major shift in relationship status and you've kind of been going through a whole new change. Can you talk a little bit about that for us?
Yeah, absolutely. It's crazy to talk about. It really is, because it was such a big chunk of my life. Very recently, I broke up with my girlfriend of 8 years. And those 8 years were 8 very formative years. We met on my 19th birthday. And, you know, we're together ever since. And we broke up right before the like official 8 years. And it was not a pretty end by any means, but having tons of time to sift through all of this and, you know, heal and whatnot, you know, the ugly end was almost necessary, because I think after 8 years, we both would have kept trying for something that wasn't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't working for a long time, but just because of, oh, what's this like loyalty to time kind of kept us there longer than we probably should have been there.
And there's a loyalty to the relationship too, even if you remove the personality. Like you said, invested so much time in that you don't want to give it up, and you know what that relationship is at its best. So I'm speaking from personal experience, but I'm sure there's in the back of your mind, we can get back to this, or we can try again.
Oh yeah.
It's been 8 years. Let's not give up.
Oh yeah. And that was a big conversation, like right before the end, like about a month before it was like fully called, you know, we called it quits. I was like, we can try again. We can date each other like we were dating for the first time in this city. Like, we didn't acclimate. We met as children. Mm-hmm. And we served a great purpose in each other's lives. And we grew together in a lot of ways. And then we got to a point where we were growing separately. There's fault on both ends. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you can, mm-hmm. you can go over all this in your head and be like, oh, you know, I could have done this better. And yes, I could have. I could have been a lot better in a lot of ways. And, you know, and the same goes for my ex. You know, there's a lot of things that we could have done better.
You say that both of you could have done better. I'm curious as to when you acknowledged that, how you felt when you were growing apart.
I think, you know, in the latter half of the relationship, you know, with us growing apart, I was, you know, starting to kind of find myself and find like what I wanted and needed out of life. And I think she was realizing the same things, and then those things just didn't align any longer. And
mm-hmm. And it's no one's fault, you know, like it's okay that you're different. It's okay that you're changing. And no one talks about how weird of a transition like your early 20s is. Like, no one talks about that shift, and everyone kind of grows apart. And so it's natural. I've seen it happen with people I consider the best friends. I've certainly seen it happen with people I've been intimate with. Like, you know, you go through grammar school, high school, college, and you're always with like a tight knit group of friends. And then once you're an adult, once you graduate, it's kind of like being out in the jungle, and people go their own ways and they turn into different types of people. And no one ever really says like, oh yeah, it's going to happen. Like, your friends are going to change. The people you love are going to change. You're going to change in your mid-20s. And things are going to be weird. You're not going to recognize a lot of things. And it happens so slowly and gradually.
Exactly. And, you know, that formative experience that you're talking about, that like having that tight knit, like I had that, but like also was tethered. I was tethered to a person. I was married for 8 years, you know, from the time I was 19 years old. I was thinking in terms of we. I was thinking in terms of collective. I was thinking in terms of partnership. And then you kind of realize, oh, wow. Okay. I started to feel stunted. And then I see my friends in these, like, you know, relationships, and they seem correct and they seem right. And I'm like, oh, wow, I remember what that felt like. Mm-hmm. And it's been a long time. It's a very interesting thing to kind of go about this backwards, right? So now it's like I'm coming out of this relationship. I'm 27 years old. And, you know, all of my friends has like found their person. And now I'm the one who's kind of like, who doesn't even really even know how to function in a world, in a dating world like this, because I haven't been an adult that's dated.
Yeah. I mean, the last time you were single in 2012, Gangnam Style was popular.
But even before that, Dan, like I went from person to person. I had my high school boyfriend, and then I had my high school to first year of college girlfriend. And then like a week later, I was with my then girlfriend that I was with for 8 years.
You mentioned validation earlier, and that's such a important part of a healthy relationship is you feeling validated in the relationship and the ability to validate your partner and what they do. How did that play a role in either the success or the demise of your relationship?
She didn't feel a sense of validation for me. I can say everything correctly. I can say all the right words. Mm-hmm. I can say, you are beautiful. You are talented. You are, you know, going to be successful. I can say all these things, but if you don't believe it in yourself, if you don't believe the words, then there's no amount of words I can say that can make you feel that. And then turning that on to myself, I think for a long time I had up until now, a lot of self image issues. Being in the arts, I mean, just like it's a constant battle of validation. Am I good enough? Yeah, it never ends. The question is never not on your brain. It's always in the forefront of your brain. Am I good enough? Am I a good enough singer? Am I a good enough performer? Am I a good enough writer? Am I pretty enough? Am I thin enough? Am I white enough? Am I Hispanic enough? Am I bisexual enough? Am I straight enough? Am I gay enough? All these questions, I mean, just like swirl around in your head. You know, you try and curate this identity with all of these questions.
You try to seek an identity, and it can be really difficult if you don't know yourself. What kind of validation were you seeking?
For a long time, what I looked for was validation in the skin I was currently in. I'm like, I am good enough, and I deserve to be loved the way I am. And I successfully found several people that loved me, and I was lucky to have that love.
And with the idea that this relationship could end, how did you find your self-validation, knowing that you might have to go through that journey alone?
As my relationship, as I felt it starting to fizzle in the last kind of year, I realized more and more, I was like, oh, wow, if I have to step back out into the world right now, into this dating world, I don't feel comfortable in my skin. I don't. And, you know, people could tell me like, you know, you could try this or you could try that and you can try this to be, you know, fit and healthy or this, this and that. And, you know, you're not going to listen unless it comes from your internal voice, right? Like it's got to come from you.
Did listening to that internal voice, did that make you more confident? Did it finally give you the ability to love and take care of yourself?
Self-love is also different than confidence, right? Like,
yes,
it's so funny. Yes. I was talking to friends last night and they're like, Amanda, like, you're one of the most confident people I know. You put yourself out there and you're like, yes, this is me. This is what I can do. And I'm like, I'm so glad you think that of me. Yeah, I think I do have a decent confidence in terms of, you know, putting myself out there in career terms. But
you can fake confidence. You can't fake self-love.
Correct. But for me, it's come in the form of regularly running and being a runner. And as a chunky girl in elementary school, you know, huffing and puffing through 1 mile, how embarrassing. And, you know, now I'm running on average like 3.5 to 4 miles a day. And, you know, if not more. And I did it for me. I did it for my mental health.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, you know, don't step on a scale. Don't think about it. This is for how you feel in your skin, how you feel on the inside. And I didn't step on a scale for, I think, 6 months. And then when I finally did, I had lost 22 pounds.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you. And I had never in a million years thought that that was even possible for me. It was never in my realm of possibility. And no amount of anyone telling me this or that was going to light that fire under my ass. It was going to, be me. It was going to say, no, like, you deserve to love yourself. You deserve to love the skin you're in. And like, yes, you've found love in the skin that you are in, but you don't love the skin you're in. And no amount of love that anyone is going to give you is going to make you love yourself.
Exactly. You can't love others until you love yourself. And as you said in Reflect It, you can't do that for your partner. That realization has to come from within, and it has to be an honest assessment. And so, you knowing that at the end of your relationship, what message did you leave for your ex at the end?
My parting words, you know, were, I really, really hope that you can find happiness and find joy, you know, not in these fleeting moments that, you know, make you feel good, but in something that is long-term and sturdy. Or in a relationship with yourself is the starting point. You just have, it has to be healthy. And I think that, you know, us being together from the time that we were 19, we didn't get to discover ourselves. We grew together. We grew up together, but we really didn't discover who we were. Coming out of it all has been very hard. But at the same time, then when it was ending, I'm like, wow, I can actually see the light at the end of this tunnel. I mean, as we were breaking up, my ex was like, you know, you're going to get like a great album out of this. And, you know, you're going to, you know, I'm going to look like the bad guy and no one's going to know my side of the story. And I'm like, listen, we both sucked. We both fucked up. And also I loved you. I loved what we had, but like, if you were never my muse, then what makes you think you'd be my posthumous muse?
Oh, wow. That's
I didn't say that, but I thought it. And I'm like, maybe there will be a song here or there, but, you know, moving on is good. And I've written a couple of ditties, not even full songs, just little snippets that kind of express that. And I think those are for me. I don't know if they're worth sharing. And I think moving forward, it's like, you know, this new album, I'm thinking if I have an album, maybe I'll call it Mating Call.
Oh,
because isn't that kind of hot?
I like that. It's a great title.
Thank you. And being like, yeah, this is me re-entering and figuring out my sexuality as a 27-year-old in New York City.
There, well, thank you for sharing all that. That was very heartfelt, and I'm sure it was hard to express.
One of the things,
I'm happy you did. And I think it's going to be very beneficial for people to hear, especially, you know, your, I'll call it a monologue for the sake of theater on being enough. And I think that's something that every single person struggles with. Like, am I enough? And I used to struggle so much because I would say to myself, I want to be better. Why am I not better? Why am I not better looking or better at talking? Why am I not further at my job? And with the help of therapy, it really helped just to one day have that switch and say, like, better is an abstract construct. And so I'm not ever going to be better looking. I'm not ever going to like change. But you know what? I like who I am. A lot of people like who I am. And instead of lamenting what I don't have, the personality aspects or the physical attributes that I long for, I need to play to my strengths and I need to acknowledge and build up the parts that I like. People think I'm funny. People like to talk to me. Like, that's really important. Yeah, and I think sometimes because we live with ourselves and our personal traits, we take them for granted and we think, oh yeah, well, everybody does this and everybody has this. If I have it, everyone else has it. And that's not true. And if you're lucky enough to have a lot of special relationships in your life, it means people gravitate towards you and you are enough. And you are good. Look, like your example of running, I think that's great. And the fact that you weren't saying, I'm running to lose X amount of pounds, I'm running to look better, like you wanted to feel better and add something to your life that was missing. That is how we build ourselves. We do not build ourselves through, oh, I need to get a better haircut. Oh, I need a better outfit. Oh, this will make me appear better to everyone else. And if they see it on Instagram, like, No. It's going to stem from you feeling good about yourself.
Yes.
And that will radiate instantly to others when they recognize that's authentic.
Exactly. And yeah, there's no amount of like posting on Instagram that's going to bring you the light that you seek, right?
Yeah.
There's no amount of like getting the job, getting the girl, getting the contract, right? There's no
getting anything. You're not going to get anything on Instagram. accept a little bit of fake validation.
Right. And there's no amount of like bursts of serotonin that you're going to get from these likes that are going to illuminate you. Like, you have to keep that fire lit. You have to continuously fuel that fire and like keep that flame bright. That's not going to come from outside validation from people saying that you're enough. That's going to come from you saying, yeah, I am.
And only you.
I had a good friend. Her name is Brooke. She's lovely. I hope she listens to this. And, you know, really, you know, right as the breakup was happening, I was over and I was, you know, crying with my friends, you know, it's like feeling my feels, really getting it out. And, you know, she reads energies and stuff like that. So she was just like, oh man, I see that you're like in this place and you will come out of the other side. And then, you know, about 6 weeks later, I saw her and I was feeling much better. I was feeling really good about myself and feeling happy in my day to day and all that kind of stuff. And she walked into the room and she was like, wow, your energy, you're glowing. She said, I can see your light. She goes, I can see like you're healing. And sure, having a hookup here and there is definitely fun in its own way, but that's not what is giving me validation any longer. Right.
Yeah.
It's me. It's me looking in the mirror and saying, you accomplished this. You feel good. Go forth. And you have to be the best version of yourself before you can give yourself to someone else. Every relationship I've ever had, they've all taught me something. And the big lesson to be learned in this one was I need to love me. I need to love me before I love anyone else.
An important lesson is, it sounds like you got this too. Like, just because you have to acknowledge there's individuals in a couple and remember yes. too that they're two separate people and you have to tend to them and make sure, you know, you're as a couple, you're going to sink down if those two people as individuals are suffering. And so you have to remember, like, there's two equal partners and they have to be treated who they are as individuals before the unit can blossom. You had mentioned in our email exchange, and I found this so beautiful. We were talking about the concept of like transitioning out of love, what happens when you lose love of your life. And I personally, like, I really grieve loss or the loss of love. I really yeah. feel like it has left me and I'm sad about it and I long for it back. And I really struggle with thinking about how can I renew that love? How can I go back to that place? The truth is I can't. You know, right. The past is the past. And even if you rekindle something with someone else or you find, you know, it will never be the same because you've changed from who you were at that point. Correct. But you had a really beautiful sentiment about reallocating love.
I have so much love to give. And though I want it from others, of course I want it from others. Of course I want someone to fall head over heels for me. I mean, who doesn't want that? But you also, it needs to feel right. And that's what I'm saying in terms of reallocating it. I think me loving myself and me respecting myself.
Love is an energy. Your words really helped me to acknowledge that it doesn't disappear. And if you're not tending to it, it does become grief and it does feel like loss, but you're feeling that because it's a sense of love. Mm-hmm. And so when you end a relationship, when someone passes away, maybe you lose a job, you know, when there's things change and shifts, you still have those feelings. You still have that love for what you lost. And I think the lesson people should take away from what you're saying is repurpose that love, bring it back to yourself if you have no other outlets to, or find someone else and be open and express that to people, but don't lose the joy of the love. Don't let it turn into grief or bitterness or heartache.
No, and bitterness is a big one. I let myself feel the bitter, right? I let myself feel the negative feelings. I let myself feel it. There's so much love to be had and there's so much love to give. Just open your eyes and look around and see how you can just love a little bit more and be a little kinder and, you know, all of these things. Just lead with it. Just lead with it. And it will bring good things to you. And I think if people sit in bitterness, if people sit in the sadness and sit in the grief, it becomes a magnet for that. You're not going to be able to gather or generate happiness out of that if you sit in it too long.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to be vulnerable, but you have to be open to it.
You have to know yourself, you know yourself in and out. Answer mm-hmm. You have to be able to answer every question about yourself on a quiz. If you were given a quiz about yourself, you know, because yeah. they have these couple of quizzes, like, you know so much about your partner, like, what's all this and stuff? And it's like, you got to know that about you.
Yeah, don't fail the quiz on life.
Don't fail.
I think you and I should start a game show where we quiz people about themselves.
Ooh, I would love that. I've always wanted to host a game show.
But I don't know how you would get the information besides directly from the person. And it seems like it could crush a lot of people's sensibilities, but it seems entertaining.
Yeah. Know thyself and then enter into the world and say, I know me. Do you want to get to know me too? From there, you can admire another person's beauty and another person's flaws. And then you can work on growing together and hopefully in the same direction.
I love that. That is a beautiful point. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. I think this was a wonderful conversation we had.
I think it was absolutely wonderful. I loved talking about this. I love talking about feelings and love and crushes and heartache and sappy songs and all the good stuff. Really just good stuff.
We'll have you on for something sillier next time.
Thank you to Amanda for coming on the show. Next week, we will address the elephant in all of our rooms. We're going to be talking about love and dating during the coronavirus and quarantine, how dating has changed, and how you could blossom healthy love in isolation. If you have a story you'd like to share with us, please email us at outofloveshow@gmail.com. Please subscribe to and review our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Out of Love is a production of WeWo Media and is recorded at Heck Street Studios. It is hosted and produced by me, Dan Cassarella. This show is mixed by Ethan Farmer, our associate producer. Aaron Bradley is our art director. The opening theme is Acolyte, and the closing theme is Toronto Mug, both written and performed by Slaughter Beach Dog. Special thanks to Danny Cassarella, Sarah Cassarella, Ian Farmer, and Melody Stola. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Stay lovely.